Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Black Brick by Dan Decker. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I am your host, Dan Decker. This week, we will continue to read Black Brick, a thriller novel featuring Jake Ramsey. Previously on Black Brick, we read, I felt numb. It was the first one of our missions that had been brought back to our doorstep. I had killed a man, and the man Shannon had killed had died as well. If the video led to us, Beltran might have no other choice but to cut his losses and let us take the fall. That was the risk we took in this line of work. My phone vibrated again, and I pulled it out, expecting another update to the story, this time one that included our pictures. It was a text from Cherry asking why we had not left the house yet. I remembered what Shannon had said, just before the alert had come in. Kurt was on his way back. I took Shannon by the arm and pulled her out of Kurt's bedroom. That earned me a glare, but she came along, phone clutched in hand. When we got to the car, I took the driver's seat while Shannon called into Black Brick. And now, continuing on with the story. 6. I remained in my seat on the airplane when the seatbelt sign turned off and the pilot announced we could get up. Those around us stood and began to remove luggage from overhead bins. Beside me, Shannon was flipping through emails. She had not waited for the plane to stop moving before she had turned on her phone. I checked my watch. It was almost 7 in the evening. It had been an eventful day, and we'd still need to brief Beltran once we returned to Black Brick. We had waited for clearance from Black Brick before heading to the airport. It turned out that the video we had been panicking about had been too grainy to give the cops anything useful. I had not yet seen it, but it showed us approaching the alley, taking out our weapons, and then heading in. Despite the assurances from Black Brick that we were safe to return, I was a little nervous that we would find the police waiting for us at the airport. I'm starved, Shannon said. Think we have time to grab a bite before heading back to Black Brick? As she spoke, her phone rang. She listened for a moment and answered affirmatively before hanging up. Beltran wants us back immediately. He just learned that we took a later flight. Apparently, we are late for a meeting. Shannon stood and pushed past me, almost running over an elderly man in the process. I apologized to the man before following Shannon off the plane and into the airport. When Shannon decided on a course of action, heaven help anybody who stood in her way, even an old man with a cane. At the end of the exit ramp, I looked around in what I hoped was a casual manner and did not see any police. Even though it was a clear spring evening, I expected that it would be cold outside, in contrast to the pleasant warm weather of Southern California. I was glad for the suit, and wondered if I might want my overcoat that was packed away in my luggage. I examined the crowd, waiting at the baggage claim, looking to see if anybody was paying too much attention to us. I half expected to see the man that had been taking pictures of us at the beach, but I did not. A family of four waited nearby. The mother was trying to calm her crying baby without success, while the father was looking for their baggage, eager to be on his way. He was gripping a toddler by the arm that was doing her best to escape. I took out my phone, pretending to check email while I continued to scan. I did not expect to find anything, but looked anyway. Even though it had been a short trip, we had still taken a full complement of luggage according to standard operating procedure. We never knew when an overnight mission could turn into several weeks. It's kind of sweet that you were so worried about Kurt's sister, Shannon said. After we had left, I had listened in on the bugs to make sure that Kurt had not gone into a rage and done anything to his sister because of what we had taken. I could not tell if Shannon was mocking me. Her arms were folded, and she was looking away while she spoke. She had put on sunglasses shortly after getting off the plane. Combined with her dark suit, she was looking too official. You never know what a man is capable of, I said, spotting our luggage and beginning to pull it off. Shannon gave an exaggerated sigh. Beware the evil that lurks in the hearts of men. Women never cause so much trouble. I grunted. Yeah, They never cause any problems. Shannon's glare was playful, mostly. Think things will be less hectic once Beltran gives us our final test and our status changes to active? Shannon asked as we left the airport. The temperature was indeed brisk, but I was comfortable with just the suit coat. The musky stink of the Philly air was almost a welcoming smell. It always felt good to come home. I doubt we'll remember what sleep was like, I said. We passed Kingstone campus half an hour later. The tall clock overshadowed the rest of the buildings. I could barely hear it ringing in the hour. If today had been a normal day, I would have attended class. I sometimes wished that my life had turned out differently, that instead of chasing down terrorists, I was actually attending a university. College was supposed to be a defining life experience, and I was doing it as a cover. We came to the end of campus and turned towards Black Brick. Despite its name, there was not a single black brick in the modern 10-story office building. I parked in the underground parking garage, and we took the stairs to the main floor. The most notable feature of the lobby was the large, thin televisions in the entryway. They rotated through promotional information for Zeratos Ventures Incorporated. The company was our cover and did a little business to keep away suspicion. The plush couches, handmade solid wood furniture, and elegant art had been designed to give the impression that Zeratos was prospering, but was not raking in money. A handful of guards were located inconspicuously throughout the floor and could easily be missed by a casual observer. Various weapons were hidden around the lobby, and in addition to those the guards had secreted away on their persons. In the middle of it all stood a large reception desk that reminded me more of a fortress than a place to greet visitors. Instead of hiring receptionists to operate the desk, Beltran assigned analysts to 4-hour rotations. I greeted Dolores and received a warm smile in return. I had often wondered what a woman like Dolores was doing working for Beltran. She should not be stuck in the office all day slogging through reports. Dolores had a new haircut that was barely longer than mine. It was a rare woman that was able to pull off hair that short, but she managed to do it. I noticed Shannon frowning at me as we headed to the elevator. What was she unhappy about now? The tint of the windows in the conference room on the 4th floor had been darkened to provide contrast with the large touchscreen at the front of the room, where Gus Capps, the head of research and intelligence, was touching the monitor to zoom in on a picture of several people that I did not recognize. Beltran turned when we entered and motioned for us to take a seat. He was a short man, but solid. The conference room table was long and narrow with 20 seats around the outside. Cherry, Tom, and Martinez were already seated at the far end of the table. They had returned on a flight earlier in the afternoon, bringing with them several hard drives, the pictures I had found in the wall, and Kurt's laptop. Martinez nodded to me, and I hesitated before returning the gesture. Martinez leaned over and whispered something in Cherry's ear. She smiled, covering her mouth with a hand as a lock of brunette hair fell into her face. I was surprised to see such an overt demonstration right under the nose of Beltran. Shannon was staring their way. By her expression, I could tell that she knew about them as well, or at least had her suspicions. "Continue, Gus," Beltran said, oblivious to Cherry and Martinez. "We've identified a man with Gina Townsend in the photos you found," Gus said, motioning with his scrawny, pale arm that looked like it had never seen the sunlight. Rumor had it that Gus had not left Black Brick for several years. While I did not quite believe it, I had to admit that Gus was more disheveled and pale than normal. He clicked the remote in his hand, and the picture of Gina and the man I had recognized showed on the large television screen that hung at the front of the room. "I believe this is Brian Payne." I was taken aback. Payne was an elusive man. Nobody had a picture of him. Where had Jason Kurt come by his? Why did Brian Payne look familiar to me? Upon closer reflection, Payne did look a little like a movie star, but I was not familiar enough with those things to know who. Kurt was stealing money from Diagon and transferring most of it to Payne, Gus said. That doesn't make any sense, Cherry said, tightening her lips. Why would Andrews hire Kurt to steal from Diagon only to give it to somebody else? I frowned, wondering what I had missed. It would have been nice if they had waited for us to start the briefing. Isn't it obvious? Tom swiveled to look at her. There was a flash of something in his eyes when he looked at Cherry that I was not able to interpret. If it comes out, Diagon wants deniability. Diagon had hired Kurt and Payne? I wondered what else I had missed. Agreed, Gus said. Kurt siphoned off close to $1 million for himself, in addition to the couple million he transferred to Payne, and was covering his tracks well. Andrews probably didn't know how much Kurt took, though I assume part of their arrangement was that he would pocket. A ringing phone interrupted Gus. Is anybody going to shut that off? Beltran asked before it got to the second ring. I checked my phone. I was not the culprit. The others were doing the same when it stopped. Beltran nodded to Gus, who opened his mouth when it started up again. Shannon nudged me and motioned to my briefcase. I could feel Beltran's eyes boring into me as I set my bag on the table and removed Kurt's tablet. It was a flashing notification of an incoming video call. Ordinarily, Shannon and I would have stopped and left the tablet and the hard drives on the third floor with the tech team, but there had not been time. It's Kurt, I said, calling his tablet. Well, shut it off, Martinez said. Hold on, Beltran said. I'm curious. I shrugged and answered. Kurt appeared on the screen. His face was scarred with acne, and wavy black hair framed his chubby face. I recognized Kurt's room in the background and wondered if the bugs we had hid had picked up anything useful yet. You should not have answered, man, Kurt said. His lips were turned up in a snarl, and he looked ready to attack. Bits of food were stuck on his unshaven face. Cheetos? I'll find you guys. You hear? Prepare for the world to come crashing down on you. Kurt worked on his keyboard. Nice place you have, I said. How many years did it take to cultivate that smell? I'm taking you guys down. Kurt held up a picture of Shannon and I leaving Kurt's bedroom. I swore. I had looked through the room and removed several cameras. I must have missed one. I smiled, hoping I had covered my shock. But it was too late because a grin split Kurt's face. Now that I have your attention, Kurt held up another picture. This one showed me walking into a store. Not incriminating in itself, but later that day, you were seen murdering a man. He held up another photo that featured me with a mask wearing the same clothes. Shannon was visible in the background of both. Put the two together, and that's some powerful evidence. The photos were convincing. He was a good artist. Shannon muttered something I did not catch. Return what you have taken, Kurt said, or you will be the most wanted man in America. I'll plant more photos of you doing other questionable activities. By the time I'm done, your own mother will hate you. How would you like the police to come knocking at your door? Yes? Well, I'll be waiting, I said. In the meantime, you might want to run as well. I have proof of the money you stole from Diagon. What do you bet they handled the matter internally? You were supposed to take some, I'm sure, but I bet they didn't plan on you stealing $1 million. Kurt paled. Oh, it seems I have a card to play too, I said. Perhaps we can reach an agreement, he said. No, I said. There's nothing to... I stopped when I heard screams coming from the tinny tablet speakers. A chill ran through my heart as I recognized the high-pitched scream of a child. Lisa. The next moment, Kurt was engulfed in flames and the video feed ended. Bomb, I said, looking around the conference room. Shannon had a look of horror on her face. Cherry was tearing up. Gus looked like he was going to get sick, and even Martinez, who was normally stoic, was trying to regain his composure. Of the people in the room, only Beltran did not seem bothered. I pulled out my phone. There may still be time. Perhaps the kid would be okay. I hadn't dialed more than the first number before Beltran grabbed my arm. Think about this, he said. What good will an emergency call from here do? Kurt is in San Diego. You won't even get the right operator. We don't need the attention. Beltran turned to Gus. Have one of your tech guys make an anonymous call that looks like it's coming from nearby Kurt's place. We waited in silence while Gus made a call and relayed Beltran's instructions. Good work, Jake, Beltran said. We confirmed that Kurt was working for Diagon as well as robbing them. Gus, continue. I watched as the others turned back to the briefing. I was surprised by the reaction from Martinez. He had a faraway look on his face. Sadness or disappointment? I could not tell. Maybe I was wrong about Martinez. maybe he did not lack normal human empathy. I just could not get past Martinez slamming a man's hand into a car door and then shattering his kneecap with a baseball bat. The man had refused to give up the information we had wanted, but we could have got him to speak another way. Shannon looked at me, concern showing on her face. It was the first unguarded emotion I had seen from her in a while. When she touched my hand, I realized I had been on the verge of snapping the tablet in two. I dropped it to the table. "People just got hurt," I said, interrupting Gus. "A criminal, yes, but his innocent little sister was in the house as well." "Truly regrettable," Beltran said. "But there's nothing more we can do but to soldier on and get to the bottom of this so we can stop it." "We're supposed to protect people," I said, "not get them killed." "Your anger is understandable," Beltran said. "If you want to take some time off, fine. Otherwise, sit down. We have work to do." I had not even realized that I had stood. I shook my head as I sat, trying to clear it of an image of Lisa burning to death. Shannon nudged me. "You okay? Let's take some time off. I could use a day by the pool." I shook my head. The cold, hard truth was that Beltran's words made sense. There wasn't anything we could do other than continue on our path. I tried to concentrate during the rest of the meeting, but kept hearing Lisa's screams. "Good work with Kurt," Beltran said to us once the briefing was over. "The op went well. Before you know it, you'll all be active." While the others exchanged smiles, I just bared my teeth. If Beltran noticed, he did not say anything. "Ordinarily, I'd like to give you guys a chance to rest, more especially so given the events of this evening, but I do not have the time. I have a list of about 100 things to do. Martinez, a man fitting Payne's description, was seen downtown earlier today. Find him. I'll email you what we know. Jake and Shannon, you will shadow Lane Vargo. I want you on him in case the sniper from the other night is targeting Daigon's executive team. I'll have mission briefs and tactical by the time you're ready. Get going." He looked at Cherry and Tom. "I need you to help out the analysts. You're going to review the files we have on Ronan Wright and Lauren Griffith." Blackbrick had been keeping watch on Bruce Andrews, Lane Vargo, Ronan Wright, and Lauren Griffith for the better part of a year. Wright was a senior vice president, and Griffith was Vargo's personal assistant, but did far more than that. I don't know what Beltran had been hoping to find on Vargo, Wright, or Griffith, but so far we hadn't turned up anything that was actionable. "Have you thought this through?" I asked. "Shannon and I were left alive by Andrew's murderer for a reason. If Vargo was behind that, he might recognize us." Beltran frowned. "Unlikely. Bruce Andrews was Vargo's liaison with Kurt. Get going." First, Andrews was stealing from the company. Now, it sounded like he had been doing it under orders from the CEO. What was going on? What had we missed? When had Beltran learned this, and why did he wait until now to tell us? Shaking my head but deciding against further voicing my doubts, I left with Shannon in tow. If the information was true, that blew apart our theory that the shooter from the other night was working for Daigon. "Quite the show in there," Shannon said once we were out of the room. "Next time you're going to explode like that, let me know. I'll bring popcorn and a Coke." I did not respond and tried to forget what had happened, but knew I never would. The thought of Lisa's curious, bright face being torched with flame would plague me for a long time. That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com, and you will receive a free ebook. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker. All rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions LC.